Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Come on! Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome today's guest, strong and powerful Ben Mutchler. Ben, are you ready to do this?
I am.
Excellent. Let's do this. Ben is a CFP. He is a managing director at Boston Research and Management. He's a frequent contributor to NBC News, Dow Jones, Kiplinger's, AARP, Bloomberg, many other outlets. I'm excited to have you on. Ben, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Sure. I guess my story starts, ironically, after an administrative error my first year in college, a small school named Susquehanna University. They put me in an upper-level economics course by accident, and the professor and I didn't realize it until it was too late to change. So while I was struggling with my major of physical therapy, I was excelling on the business side. And luckily, the school had a fantastic business program, the Sigma Weiss School of Business, and I spent an internship at a multinational firm and quickly realized just too many ladders to climb and backs to stab in that world. So, and the actual clients were really far away. So I opted to take a role as a financial advisor. I spent my first 8 years kind of cutting my teeth on the sell side of the industry before finding a perfect firm on the buy side that was willing to was looking to expand their services. And that's how I found Boston Research and Management.
Nice. And just real quick,
in terms of
yeah, go ahead. What's the difference between the buy side and the sell side?
Well, so when you look at the industry from the outside, the sell side makes up a large majority of I'll call it financial advisory firms. But these companies are often manufacturers of products and then distributors of those products. So they have an agenda, which is move product, and they're selling something versus the buy side. And they're sitting on the other side of the table saying, we don't have anything to sell. We don't have a book or an inventory. We're just buying investments from these various companies or, you know, just on the market as a whole.
Got it. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
So what kind of
background from our firm?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Our firm background, we were founded about 28 years ago. I've been here for 13. We're a fee-only fiduciary firm before it was kind of in vogue to do so. And we began as just a team of professional investors entirely focused on the process of researching and identifying stocks and bonds for our clients. And we've since evolved into a holistic wealth management firm coordinating our clients' tax strategy, estate planning, financial projections, but still maintaining that direct management over their investment assets. So we're entirely independent, and that affords us a luxury of being completely free of a parent company's kind of agenda or profit motives. We operate just as a big team with each member kind of possessing a different area of expertise. Ironically, as the time has marched on, the business of wealth management firms has changed, and we found ourselves one of the last parties standing, a little bit of a vacuum for wealthier families, as a lot of firms have morphed to become just mutual funds, and that tends to push the clients further away. They've become asset allocators, or what's been more popular, at least in New England, is increasing the minimum assets to a pretty substantial. We're seeing $10 to $25 million minimums, so that's quite hefty for a lot of families.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so you probably told me, but what are the ideal types of clients for you?
We're generally working with a lot of first or second generational wealth. And a lot of that comes from business owners and then their kids. Clients often find us after being frustrated, bouncing around from one broker dealer to another. And while we manage a couple endowments, we generally prefer to work with families as opposed to pensions. Those are entirely different methodologies, and humans have a fiscal needs over a finite period of time, and pension funds arguably have infinite holding periods, so they can afford a lot lower levels of liquidity than a family looking to retire or send kids to college in a couple of years. So we work to customize investment strategies that work for each particular relationship rather than subscribing to an overarching model and trying to be everything for everybody.
Got it. So can you go a little deeper into customizing investment strategies?
Yeah, sure. So that process generally starts with identifying the proper, we'll call it strategic allocation. And we generally define that as an equity range. So for example, 45 to 65% equity exposure. We'll then elect where we are within that range for a client based on macroeconomic and current market inputs. It's not static. To determine the range, we're generally looking at income and liquidity needs, time horizon, the tax status, and also the client's, we'll call it, quote, sleep at night capability during volatile markets. Mm-hmm. We're typically doing quite a bit of work on their financial projections as well and their growth needs to make sure we're not taking on more volatility or more risk than necessary.
Got it. I think that's such an important thing to, that's something I hope people who are listening really, really understand, is that just because you're 35 years old or 55 and, you know, rules of thumb say that here's how you should be investing does not mean that that's the appropriate way for you to be investing, right? Because it could mean that you're not able to sleep, or you're just not comfortable with it, or maybe you're interested in being way more aggressive. So I think to your point of customizing an investment strategy for an individual person or family is such an important thing.
That's super true. And I think a lot of folks just find themselves backed into an allocation that, and then telling themselves, I know I just need to be a long-term investor, mm-hmm. but not knowing how you're going to react, or even worse, knowing that you are going to react poorly in a period of financial duress, really can erode capital over time. And you'd probably be better off just not putting yourself into a situation where you feel forced to make a bad decision.
Yeah, right. Would you say that you have an overall investment strategy or style, rather?
Yeah, I would. We're classic value investors at our core. So most of our work is done on the valuation side. We're looking for disconnects between intrinsic value and what the market is implying. So we're not recreating the wheel over here. You know, however, fewer and fewer firms focus on this, we'll call it the business behind the ticker symbols. A lot of folks are opting for speculation of future profits and future opportunity. We look at risk a little differently from most investors, and we outsource very little of the portfolio to third-party managers. So this helps to reduce the fees, which is essential to wealth building and compounding values as accounts grow.
Got it. The business behind the ticker symbol. I've never heard that before. That certainly makes sense. So can you just define that a little bit or differently, perhaps?
Yeah, certainly. So that kind of goes on to the process of our equity component. So our equity discipline is kind of simple. We want to buy superior businesses at attractive prices. And not to oversimplify this, but if your cousin asks to borrow or invest $10,000 in his business, what's your first question?
I'd be curious what the what kind of business he'd want to be starting.
Exactly.
I laugh because I was just thinking about my cousins. So
everybody has a story to tell. Yet so many investors never ask that question, and they ask, "Oh, what did prior investors get?" And what I mean by that is they look at the stock price, right? Oh, I want to buy the stock. Well, what has it done? That's irrelevant to what it might do in the future, because at the end of the day, it's a business. And what are we buying when we're buying a stock? We're just buying the the future revenue of that company. That's it. So if a company is never expected to make revenue, they would have zero value. In a simple way, that's why nonprofits don't have stocks, because there's nothing to put a value on. And so what a lot of folks find themselves doing is speculating that in the future, there will be profits that will somehow get returned to them. And that's why we're dealing with a lot of companies that that often drive themselves into bubble territory, where the stock price gets too high and the profits are too far in the future.
Got it. So I think that makes a lot of sense. There's a reason that the primary reason that nonprofits do not issue stock is because there is no profit, and there will never be a profit just by nature of that. So when you say get driven into bubble territory, can you go a little deeper into that?
Well, I think a lot of what drives the way we look at the market is looking at it through the lens of valuation. And we need to be able to apply a value to a company. And when profits or expectations get too disconnected from stock price, you end up with a position that becomes irrelevant or to the current market value. And what I mean by that is something just goes up too much, and we're expecting something to happen, and maybe if that doesn't happen, the price just goes down substantially. And so we'd much rather say, let's not speculate on an event happening, but let's try to place a value on something that we have a tremendous amount of certainty around. What do we have a lot of certainty around? Well, generally, we can find a lot of certainty around a company's revenues and their ability to grow those revenues. And we're not particularly speculating on a new product or a new car or a new model or a new technology to drive that growth.
Got it. I think that makes sense. Okay, so that really is really digging in and understanding the business behind the ticker and really getting a good understanding of, it's not just because the stock is going up, 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 because that could be irrational exuberance or who knows, a million different variables, but it's not necessarily the fundamentals that you look at when you're evaluating what companies that you should be holding for your clients.
That's right. We generally find our equity positions through one of three processes. And the first is we want to identify tremendous business models. And so we look for companies that have, for example, very high barriers to entry or patent protection, strong brand awareness. And these are essentially companies with big moats around their business. Mm-hmm. That calls down a universe of about 5,000 stocks to maybe one or 200 companies who have, we'll call it, business models that we admire. Generally, these are large companies typically based in the U.S. So from there, we can start to apply our stringent financial analysis, looking at areas like profitability and earnings growth, and balance sheets, free cash flow, et cetera. So for the companies that make it past those gauntlets, we'll launch very deep research into their businesses and eventually get ourselves to a place where we can apply a valuation on them. And if that valuation is substantially different from what the market is implying, we'll start to consider them for inclusion to the portfolio. So it's a pretty long process.
Got it. I have to imagine.
The second way we identify stocks is to just take those same stringent financial requirements and apply them to the universe of stocks. And technology allows us to do that now. And from time to time, they'll come back with a company that we didn't know existed. You know, often a small infrastructure firm that's just not on anybody's radar screen. And we'll launch research, and some of our best names have been uncovered that way. The last way is generally just thematically. So, for example, we might look at energy prices and launch research into that sector, or water scarcity, or battery power. This has uncovered a lot of interesting names for us as well, but we'll often end up indexing to access that area.
Got it. So there are scenarios where you would use an index fund. Okay. Can you give an example of that?
Yeah. And I should start by saying, you know, we're completely agnostic to product type. You know, there is a role for index funds and for stocks and for bonds and for mutual funds and for managed products. our goal and our challenge is identifying the most efficient way to access a particular category or strategy. So we'll index generally through exchange-traded funds when we don't think we can uncover a competitive advantage. And a good example of this might be like emerging markets. So it's important to have exposure there, but it's very difficult to outperform in that space. You know, we don't have an office in Brazil. We don't know the next grocery store chain to make it big.
Right.
But it's also, we have to know international funds, if we went with more of an active strategy, they're just inherently a lot more expensive. And that provides another hurdle to us. So using an ETF allows us to adjust exposure side. And nowadays we can even overweight or underweight a particular country or region. Another way we'll use ETFs, as alluded to earlier, is when equity research uncovers an attractive sector, let's say, but the individual equity risk is really high in that arena. So it's frustrating to be in the right sector, but with the wrong stock. And to reduce that risk, we'll use a sector ETF to gain kind of broad exposure. Good example of this would be biotechs back in 14 and 15. And there was just a ton of mergers and acquisition in that space. And those companies were being acquired, were doing really, really well. But there was a huge delta between the ones that didn't see acquisitions. And that's often not about business fundamentals or profitability. So picking the thematic performance is more important sometimes than uncovering the good management team and operating margins.
Got it. You know, it's been fascinating just the way that technology has been changing really every aspect of our lives, but certainly investing. And this is sort of a random question, but as more information becomes available through things like you just talked about, how you can screen through hundreds, if not thousands, of stocks probably pretty quickly. How do you see artificial intelligence, or perhaps that is already sort of our artificial intelligence, changing the world of investment management?
Well, I think we can take a lesson from what quantitative management has done. And I don't pretend to be an expert on AI, but it's just applying another level of big data and insights to price movement. And where we've seen that business go is it's not saying let's identify really good businesses at really good prices. It's saying how can we make money 10 decimal points out, knowing that we now trade a million times a second. I think one of the really interesting stories was it became evident to large investment firms that were running quantitative mathematical analysis and algorithms that if they were physically a little closer to where the internet comes into America, which is like downtown New York City,
right,
they could see someone else's trade and get ahead of it by a microsecond and make, you know, a 16th of a cent, and do that a million times per minute, and all of a sudden create an investable category. And we look at, again, that falls into the category for us as price speculation. You're manipulating the prices rather than saying, what do I actually own? And the uncertainty around that is tremendous. And so I think where we're looking at it, very, very little can replicate rolling up your sleeves and poring over a balance sheet and trying to understand a company under a microscope. Where I think AI is going to provide some value is maybe on macroeconomic movements and being able to compare how has this historic asset moved in coordination with maybe a change in interest rates or a change in inflation rates.
Got it. Thank you. Well, Ben, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
I would say we want to know what you own, you want to know why you own it, and you want to know what it's costing and how you're doing. You want a lot of transparency to your positions. If you don't know those answers, find a way to get those answers. Lots of folks are paying more than they should and not doing as well as they should.
Well, I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets it. Come on.
Come on.
And it's so true these days. Well, probably always has been. Just the more information that you can get and the more transparency that you have, I think it's better for everybody. So, Ben, thank you so much for coming on. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you?
We're online at bostonrm.com.
Perfect. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Ben your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to bostonrm.com. Check out everything that they are working on. I'll list that in the notes of the show as well. Thank you again, Ben.
Pleasure to be.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight because we are all in this together. Before I go, quick announcement. I've been asked by so many people over the past couple of years about how do I start a podcast that I've developed and released a course that will teach you exactly how to do that step by step, from figuring out the kind of show that you want to have to understanding how all the technology works behind it, and then how to get great guests and keep the thing moving and how to grow it. So if you're interested in that, check it out. You can go to georgegrumbacher.com/podcast course and you'll find it there. You can just go to the website. I'll also list that in the notes of the show.
What's up, Savage Nation? Please support the show by subscribing, leave us a review, and definitely feel free to share us with somebody you think would like it.
Come on.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future, because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts, so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.